This is The Loving Project, a podcast celebrating the 50th anniversary of Loving v. Virginia, a Supreme Court decision that legalized interracial marriage across America.
In this episode, we hear from Len and Fernando. They met in 1981, but didn't get married until over three decades later. They were part of the lawsuit that helped make same-sex marriage legal in Pennsylvania, a year before the U.S. Supreme Court legalized gay marriage nationwide.
I'm Fernando. I'm Chinese, and I was born in Cuba.
I'm Len. I'm white. I was born in California and grew up in Vermont. We met on January 27th, 1981. We've been together since then. In 1993, we adopted a daughter who's now 25.
And thanks to the American Civil Liberties Union in Pennsylvania, we were one of 10 plaintiffs who filed a lawsuit against the Commonwealth for the right to get married. We've been together since 1981, but we've been married since 2014. So we filed the lawsuit and wanted to get involved in that fight for many reasons. Straight couples want to get married. One is the recognition by the community that we love each other. Another one is the legal benefits it confers on us and on our child.
Actually, our daughter promoted the idea of our getting married. It made a difference to her. And so that was definitely part of the motivation too.
Our child jokes that she's no longer a child born out of wedlock. So she's happy that we got married.
There wasn't actually a trial in the Pennsylvania marriage case. It was done through a process called summary judgment based on the depositions that had been taken of all the different plaintiffs. And I don't remember the specific questions, but I do remember just the odd sense of being kind of grilled, politely, but still grilled by a woman representing the Commonwealth about why it was really that important to me to get married and what was it really that we would gain? Why did it matter? Those kinds of things. And it was a very odd set of questions to be trying to cope with. It didn't feel like I should have to justify any more than anyone else in thinking about getting married would get interrogated by a public official about why. Why do you want to do this? What's so important about it? And I remember feeling like asking her, well, you know, are you married? Why did you decide to do it? You know, we all have our reasons, but they're not really part of the process if you're a straight couple.
Yeah, so there was a big legal process and then we won. So we had to get married and pay our fees. So we went to City Hall and our daughter was with us. It was all very anticlimactic. We signed the paper, paid the $80. We took a picture and then we walked out.
And then we did have a wedding in our house.
Yeah, we did it during Thanksgiving when family came. So Len being the country mouse from Vermont, it was a small, simple affair. I would have wanted, you know, 300 people in a Chinese restaurant with lots of food, but that's what we did. And our daughter is still waiting to be the wedding planner for our wedding to make it a big to-do. And we might still do that. So
we had a small group of people, family, friends. We sang a couple songs, we said a few things, and that was it. And actually, you know, that was a very nice way to do it. Our daughter and I, as part of the ceremony, performed the song from Fiddler on the Roof, Do You Love Me?, which starts with Tevye asking, do you love me? And Gola says, do I what? After 35 years or 25 years, whatever it is for us, we altered it a little bit, put in whatever the number was at the time. And it did sort of fit because we had been together for a very long time. And there was this kind of question in the air, why bother at this point? Why even think about getting married? And actually, the song provides a nice answer to that. Tevye asks his wife, do you love me? And she goes through this whole process after all these years. How can we even think about that? Maybe you have a stomachache. That's why you're asking me this question. You know, I've washed your clothes. I've done this. I've done that. And still, you know. And he keeps asking, but do you love me? And in the end, she says, well,
after 25 years of washing your clothes, cooking your food, ironing your clothes, do I love you? I suppose I do.
So yeah. That was part of our ceremony.
When I was in law school, there was a requirement that students do an externship. And I landed at the U.S. Department of Justice. And that's where I met Len, who was a U.S. attorney at the time.
And we just sort of started talking and started getting to know each other, and things went from there.
Right. And then after I graduated, there was another bad administration in town. And so I think Len was looking to leave the U.S. Department of Justice, and I got a fellowship to do community organizing and advocacy, and I was placed in Philadelphia, so that was the time to move. So in 1984, we packed up and came to Philadelphia. And in thinking back, there were a lot of milestones which could have been and maybe were very dramatic. We were not married. We had no friends here. It was a new job, new city, new everything. But maybe every couple goes through that when people pick up and go, but we didn't think about all these things. But we managed to do that, and here we are some 30 years later, still in Philadelphia. In college, I had a boyfriend who was white. In law school, I had a brief relationship with someone who was black, and then we met. And then there was a time after we met, we moved to Philly, and then I moved away back to Washington, D.C. to work with a refugee organization. There was a lot of self-reflection on my part as to whether I wanted to continue spending the rest of my life with a white guy. So I was in Washington, D.C., and I was one of the founders of a LGBT support group for Asian Pacific Islanders. And so just being surrounded by LGBT Asian people was great. And that whole environment of being surrounded by like-minded people with like-minded experiences of issues with our parents and racism within the Asian community was very supportive. And so there was a group of Asians in this group in DC who would only date other Asians. And so that whole thing was going on in my mind. So I think this is a process that some of us have to go through where we need to be with our own. And then through a process, we see the person we love. And regardless of the race, if we love that person, we end up living with them, even marrying them. But depending on where you are in your life, your age, your life, your circumstances, you need to feel supported maybe with people who have lived similar experiences. And then through time, you know, the end of the story, here we are 30 some years later.
I had had a relationship of several years with an African-American man who is still a close friend of mine. And I think maybe something similar happened there in that it learning that race matters, that race is one of many things that matters and that can be differences between people, so that when something happened that I might have taken as exclusionary or you know, why can't I be part of this too? He was helpful in sort of helping me see that it wasn't personal, it wasn't about me, but it was about the differences in backgrounds that people bring. And so there was, for me, a learning process there. I grew up in what I think used to be, anyway, the whitest state in the country. And I didn't have much contact with non-white people, really, until I got to college. But on the other hand, I grew up in the 60s in the middle of the civil rights movement. And so I kind of tried to learn as I went and sort of think about race and think about what it means to relate to people of other races, how they might see me, how I might see them, what attitudes I might bring, what mattered, what didn't. So I feel like I had a little experience in trying to sort of struggle with those things before Fernando and I met. And, you know, I think it's been a continuing, I mean, I think we're very conscious of differences as well as similarities. And I don't think we've ever tried to operate as though they don't matter.
My father's Chinese, my mother is Chinese and Cuban. And maybe non-Chinese people don't know this, but the old Chinese generation is very, very racist. against anything not Chinese. To soften the blow that I fell in love with a man, I was thinking of telling my father that I fell in love with a black woman. And then when I said, no, not really, I really love a man, that would have been easier. But anyway, Len came home and that was fine, and then came home regularly. My father is an astute businessman, so I think he knew what was going on, even though I never actually said, you know, we're gay. And I had been out to my mother, but not to my father. And even until he died, we never talked about it. But he knew. I mean, two guys, we've been together for all these years. We bring home a child. He actually told me he was an important person in the Chinese community. And out of the blue, one day when I was home, he told me that there was a waiter in a Chinese restaurant who the owners of the restaurant wanted to fire him. This waiter, we all knew, was gay. And my father, not relevant to any conversation we're having, says, you know, and I defended him. I told the owners not to fire this waiter. And I said, okay, that's very nice. So that was maybe his way of telling me, I know, and you're fine.
I didn't really know how my family would react, because there were so many different things going on at once. I mean, there was sort of, they're really having to confront my being gay as well as this interracial aspect of the relationship. But I think at that point, I had gone through enough twists and turns with my parents that I had just decided that however they reacted, I was going to be okay. And I sort of prepared myself for a negative reaction, which I thought I might get from my father. It didn't happen. It took some, I don't know, it took some thought on his part or some time or something, I think, for him to become comfortable. And I don't really know what he was becoming comfortable with, whether it was my being gay, whether it was the interracial relationship, but it did work out. It just took some time. We went through a long process of just trying to sort of break into the adoption system. It was not easy at the time, and we went through quite a few false starts with agencies that either, you know, once they realized that we were gay, completely lost interest, or sort of thought maybe they could manage it, but then it got complicated. And we didn't have a particular preconception of what, quote, kind of child we wanted to adopt. We wanted to adopt a younger child. We had some preference for adopting a daughter, although I don't think even that was absolute. So the first thing to say about our adoption process is it took a very long time. It was very frustrating because we kept getting turned down. Then somehow we found someone who helped us sort of figure out some ways to get through the process. And all of a sudden, this child, this baby, she was 9 months old at the time, became available, and she was African American. And I remember being both really excited because it finally looked like it was really possible, and also fearful that we would be subjecting a child to so many differences and so many complications and so many potential prejudices and attitudes and confusions that it wouldn't be fair to her. And I don't know what the right answer to that is. I do know that in our case, a couple people made a big difference to me in sort of deciding that whatever was involved there, we would deal with it somehow. One was my mother, whose reaction was, how wonderful, you know. Another was the African-American friend of mine that I mentioned earlier, who, when I told him about the sort of qualms I was having about adopting an African-American child, I think he was actually, I don't know that he was offended, but he was like, how can you even think that way? You know, if you're a good parent, you'd care about this child, you all those things that matter in raising a child, that's the important thing. And sure, there will be racial issues and racial differences. And even now he talks to me about those. But his feeling was that underneath all that, race is not the most important thing. It may not even be an important thing in that decision. And that helped.
For me, race in part was an issue for reasons I stated, the Chinese part. It was my mother who was the hysterical Cuban saying, you know, don't bring her home. Your father's going to hit the roof. And I said, well, she's our daughter. And if he wants to have a relationship with me, he's got to accept our child. So then we travel home and we have pictures of my father feeding our child food with chopsticks. And so it's like a little papa bird feeding baby bird, little somethings. You know, they had a fine relationship. So my mother just was crazy. But that worked out okay. We did a mapping of our friends, of the support that she would have, of the neighborhood that we lived in. And so we wanted to make sure that the child felt comfortable and was not like the only that in this school or this neighborhood or friends. So most definitely we were sensitive to issues of color. So we surrounded her with our friends who are people of color and African-American. We placed her in a school that we had the luxury or the wherewithal to put her in a Quaker school that makes sure that people are respected regardless of their parents and regardless of their economic background. When she was old enough to go to summer camp, we placed her actually in a summer camp of kids with LGBT parents. Admittedly, most of the parents were lesbians. I don't think we met any other child whose parents were white and Chinese Cuban, but we wanted to make sure that she felt supported.
While there's plenty of times when race comes into the equation when you're not anticipating that it will, there are other times when you might expect it to and it doesn't. And I at least have sort of learned that even though race is everywhere in America, people aren't necessarily thinking about race all the time. And a defining moment for me, just a short time after our daughter was first placed with us, I had her in the stroller. And I went to the liquor store and I came out of the liquor store, put my bottle of wine in that pocket that they have in the back of the stroller. And so here I am and here's our daughter in the stroller. She was, I don't know, a year, year and a half old. And an African-American woman comes up to me and gives me this kind of serious look. And she says, "Where'd you get that?" And I thought she was asking where I had got our daughter. And I kind of panicked. And I was at the time very self-conscious about, I mean, here I am, kind of older guy with a baby and a color and all this stuff. And so we stared at each other for a minute. And then she said, "The stroller." She said, "I'm looking for a stroller like that for my daughter." And, you know, at that moment, I realized that, okay, not everyone is thinking about race all the time, and that maybe I could relax a little bit about it. I feel like it's been a process of constantly trying to understand what our daughter is going through as an African-American person, as an African-American person being raised by two men, as an African-American person being raised by two men of other races. And it's not like those issues disappear. And somehow, I still think that underneath them all, if you can have a loving relationship, to coin a phrase, that's kind of transcends everything. It doesn't make it go away. I also think that between us, race is only a piece of some pretty big cultural differences. I mean, we have really different family backgrounds, geographical backgrounds, childhoods, everything was different. And some of it could be attributed to race and culture, and some of it's just individual differences and so forth. But if anyone needs an example of how two people from really different kinds of households and child-rearing practices and parental occupations and, you know, can get along with each other, I think we're it, because the differences are pretty big.
But the shared experience that we have, though, is, I think, the gay experience. So we do have different lens from the North and I'm from the South, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the shared experience of being gay and all that means with our parents, with our friends at school, is a binding thing. And then there's differences, but then there's also similarities.
Well, I think the differences have been part of what's made the relationship work, actually. I think that that's been a lot of what our relationship has been about. It's been about sort of experiencing each other's differences and each other's respectively different, I was about to say crazy, but they're not crazy, but they're just, they're families, you know, and they're very different from each other. And I think that's partly what's kept us going.
Chinese people cut vegetables at a slant. So I assume that everybody knows to do this. So I got really angry at Len when he cuts the broccoli stem in rounds instead of in a slant. And I'm saying, this is showing your cultural incompetency and you're so ignorant. But that was evidence of, like, you don't know me and where I'm coming from. Very minor, but it's those little things that count.
Well, it's little things that you assumed to be universal, right? Or maybe that you assumed the other person would have bothered to find out about your culture, your background, your ways of doing things. So it's really not about the angle that you cut the vegetables at, but it's about whether you have bothered to understand who the other person is and what their habits are and what their family's habits are and how things work. I think that Fernando's family's background, which includes, you know, even before his family left Cuba, before that, his father had left China in order to escape communism and had gone to Cuba, which was a bit of a miscalculation, it turned out, but it worked at the time. So his father had really started with nothing, and being a very entrepreneurial guy, had managed to create a life and a family in Cuba. And all of his networks and associates, it's an entrepreneurial make it for yourself kind of background, right? So my parents' background was quite different. My dad was a scientist and academic. My parents never had to escape from anywhere. It was just a real different process for them, sort of establishing themselves, creating a family, creating a livelihood, and so forth. I mean, I feel like I've learned something about that kind of entrepreneurial spirit and capacity to kind of take anything and make something out of it. One thing I've always admired about Fernando is that if there's an onion and jar of mustard, you know, in the refrigerator, he can create a 6-course dinner out of it. He doesn't really need ingredients somehow or plans or recipes or anything like that. So that's his father, right? I mean, so I think sort of just some different ways of looking at the world. I think that another way in which my background is different is that conflicts and crises and problems get dealt with differently. I'm not talking about refusing to talk about them or something like that, because that's actually not my background, but there's just a different dynamic in terms of dealing with controversy and difficulty.
Yeah, the default position in the two cultures that I come from, both Chinese and Cuban, is to talk really loud even when you're not angry. In fact, my daughter often says, you know, use your inner voice, don't talk so loud. And I'm not thinking that I'm talking loud, but she thinks Americans think I am. So anyway, so those are all things that we have to negotiate, and we're learning from each other.
So we've had two alternative ways of dealing with, or maybe multiple alternative ways of dealing with controversy and difficulty. And that's sort of added to the repertoire, I think. And sometimes when my way or the way that I grew up with doesn't work, Fernando's way turns out to work, and vice versa. I don't exactly remember clearly my perceptions during my first meeting with Fernando's family, but I know that it struck me as, wow, things are really different here, but maybe if I just learn some of the basics, I'll understand it. Well, 20 years, 30 years later, in some ways, I still don't understand it. And that's because I didn't grow up in that situation. I don't live in that situation. So I think you have to have sort of a maybe openness to knowing that there's always more there to understand about other people, and that it's more than just recognizing that stereotypes are frequently wrong. It's that knowing that the stereotypes are wrong doesn't get you the whole way either. I mean, that tells you maybe what's wrong, but it doesn't really help you figure out what the realities are. And truth is, the realities of any culture or any person's cultural background are complicated. And if nothing else, I guess, having to confront that and realize one's own inadequacy, the notion that I realize there's things I never will understand, that seems like a healthy thing. And it's something that's probably true of two white people or two African Americans also. But because we have these racial shortcuts in the way we approach other people, I think sometimes we overlook the complexities.
We'd like to thank Fernando and Len for sharing their story with us. You can find out more about the Loving Project at our website, lovingproject.com. That's where you'll also find more episodes, links to follow us on social media, and pictures of some of the couples profiled on the show.
The Loving Project is available in iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and just about anywhere else you find podcasts. And if you like the show, please consider leaving a review. I'm Farrah Parks.
And I'm Brad Linder. Thanks for listening to The Loving Project.
In the next episode of The Loving Project, we'll hear from Kevin and Lisa.
Kevin is Korean and Lisa is white. They have two young daughters, and Lisa says sometimes when she's alone in public with her children, people jump to conclusions.
I would take Lillian to the mall, and a lot of people assumed that she was adopted. I had all the best comebacks with the next daughter, and no one has ever asked me if she was adopted. So people assume that. And my daughters, they don't look like me. That was never an issue for me.
And I think Lisa says they don't look like her, but there are definitely traits. Honestly, our daughters are the best of both of us, and there's certain...
But when the general public sees them, they see Asian. When people that know us and love our daughters, they see both of us.
Lisa and Kevin's story, coming up next time on The Loving Project.